You're listening to Quantum Talks with Alex and Evan.
Hello, hello. Hi, everyone. My name is Evan Kubis. I'm the president of the Quantum Daily, and I'm joined today alongside the CEO of the Quantum Daily, Alex Challens. As I hope many of you know, we are the founders of the Quantum Gate, the leading media and data platform out there in the quantum computing space. We thought we'd kind of start putting together a bi-monthly, bi-weekly webinar. We're not really too sure yet. Just kind of show insights into the space, our thoughts of what's going on, how we see it, how we're reporting on it, as well as kind of the genesis of this, of our company and where we kind of see the space going. So with that, so happy to have everyone join us today. Maybe I'll begin by giving a little bit of a brief introduction to myself. So like I said, I'm Evan Kubis. I am the president of the Quantum Daily. Founded the company back in November 2019 as kind of a side project, seeing kind of the growth of quantum computing, but not really seeing much to do as it relates to resources and helping people understand what's going on. So with that, maybe I'll introduce Alex, let him kind of give you guys a brief introduction because he is kind of the leader of our group here, and we'll get right into it.
Thank you, Evan, and welcome all to our webinar. As Evan said, my name is Alex Challens. I'm the CEO of the Quantum Daily, and being British, I have no real idea what the difference is between a CEO and a president. Effectively, Evan and I lump in together and try and get a good job done in the market. As Evan alluded to, the Quantum Daily is a leading provider of info and data on quantum technologies. And so over the next few weeks, in addition to doing what we do every day, which is speaking to everyone in the market and covering what is a very exciting industry, we're going to try and have some more in-depth conversations. So it won't just me, Evan and I talking to each other ad infinitum. We'll be bringing on guests to talk to us and get a little bit more of a scoop as to what we're seeing in the market. But yeah, Evan, why don't you start off by telling our listeners how on earth the Quantum Daily emerged?
Absolutely. So the genesis of the Quantum Daily is pretty akin or pretty similar to a lot of other startups. So to give a little bit of background, I'm a lawyer by trade, practicing both in the US as well as Canada. And really, I have this, a little bit of a weird obsession with classical computing and startups in general. And through my kind of research in that area and reading books and biographies, et cetera, this concept or this theory of quantum computing kept emerging. I don't have an engineering background. I don't have a science background whatsoever, but it kept coming up. So I began to wonder kind of what was going on with it. There's this concept in classical computing called Moore's Law, which essentially says every year a chip gets twice as small but twice as powerful. But as a result of that, a lot of kind of theorists or experts on the space start saying this has actually slowed down in recent years. So with that, it's actually a limitation on what classical computing can do. And from there, that was actually kind of a part of the genesis of the quantum computing industry, saying what is the next evolution from here? Where do we go? So as I began researching the topic, a few things really became clear. One was the fact that virtually everything I was reading on the space was highly academically focused. Again, me not having that engineering or that science background really found that difficult to understand. And number two was there wasn't really, a central resource dedicated exclusively to this space. You would have maybe Harvard come out with something, MIT Review come out with something, Time Magazine maybe with a puff piece here or there, but there really wasn't much dedicated exclusively to discussing the space, particularly as it relates to the commercial and practical applications of it. And, you know, as I mentioned before, the company was founded or incorporated back in November 2019. Obviously, there was a lot of buildup before that and sort of planning, but really saw a unique opportunity to kind of make this central resource dedicated to the space because there was no one really talking about it. Capital was really beginning to be injected into the space in around that time. And, you know, everyone kept talking about how quantum computing held the secrets to everything from biotech to even teleportation to time travel to space to big pharma to, you know, even just general business endeavors, so to speak. But there wasn't anyone really focusing on this or talking about it. So saw it as an opportunity to kind of get involved in what I found a very interesting space and help kind of create that platform for the various stakeholders to share their message and discuss the various topics. And from there, you know, to give some of our readers some of the funny stories behind it, really built the website over the course of a couple weekends using Wix. And from there, didn't have any content, didn't have any writers. So funny enough, you know, I'm going to put this on the record. What we did was really early on, we had this kind of neat idea to collect virtually every article we can find on the quantum computing space and send them out to a content rewriting platform, actually based out of India, to help us kind of facilitate that. So funny story, obviously very little journalistic integrity at the beginning, but we really had to find a way for us to populate the site. Articles came back virtually unreadable. Content was horrible and we couldn't use them. So a pretty early waste of a few thousand quid, so to speak. But from there, kind of straightened up, we were able to connect with a few very intelligent and very hardworking journalists from universities based in London as well as Pennsylvania, who came on as our leading writers. And those gentlemen go by the name of James Dargan and Matt Swain, who I think most people know now as probably the leading journalist across the quantum computing space, having interviewed stakeholders, including Ilias Khan, Tony Utley, and John Martinez, and Nick Farina, and pretty much every major player across the space. And from there, you know, didn't really, you know, a lot of it was the right place to right time. We did get a little bit lucky. Kind of like I said, the industry as a whole was very much in its infancy when we launched. And this was really just a couple of years ago now, but it's since blossomed to a pretty robust space that is being seen unprecedented capital injected over the last few months. So I know I've done quite of a ramble there. So maybe I'll hand it over to Alex if you have any kind of questions too about the genesis. But I know I'd love to hear your involvement, how you got involved in the company as well, and where you kind of see kind of our core focus, et cetera.
Yeah, thank you, Evan. It's funny, I'd forgotten about that, about, you know, trying to find a way to get things off the ground. And, you know, it may sound cavalier, but, you know, with any new business, and there'll be plenty of startups in the quantum space, that, you know, you've always got to find ways to get something from zero to that first scrape of a business, and, you know, some clear lessons learned there. I mean, my interest in the space goes back similarly to Evan. It's, you know, like many people in this industry, it's a kind of nerdy obsession with this idea of quantum physics, which is just so unnatural to understand at first. And, you know, the more I started researching it, you know, I was, you know, for about a decade, I was working in the finance industry, whether it was, you know, raising capital in big real estate deals, or whether I was focusing on, you know, tech and software deals in the private equity space. Typically, it was, you know, looking at markets which had already been developed, and it was finding ways to build new revenue models and finding new ways of, you know, iterating on existing businesses. Some absolutely fantastic business owner founders, etc. But for me, what I always found a little bit more interesting was people building something out of nothing. And that is what we've seen in the quantum industry. It is a, you know, quantum physics has been around for quite a while now. The concept of it, the idea of building a quantum computer, has been around for decades now. But it's only in the last few years that we've started to see companies, organizations getting real focus around, actually, could this be real? And so, you know, as Evan was saying, when we started seeing these articles saying, well, look, it holds the kind of key to the mysteries of the universe. You can't help be, you know, enthralled by the story. And so what we've been trying to do is trying to unpick that. You know, there is plenty of companies out there who are doing genuine, amazing things and, you know, doing stuff that goes far beyond my head and, you know, the rest of the teams that I imagine as well.
And quite the learning curve, I think. For
quite the learning curve, yeah. And then there are, of course, you know, players where, you know, otherwise we don't understand them yet, or, you know, it's not quite clear what they're doing. And so it's really the Wild West. But it's the Wild West where, as Evan said, there's a huge amount of capital flowing in, both from governments and the venture capital firms. So, you know, we think there's about 25 billion of committed financing from governments, and that's just on the commercial end. So we have no idea how much the US and China have been putting into the military applications of quantum technology. And so there's this big wall of capital going into something where there's still a lot of uncertainty, if not around the science, at least around the exact shapes of the businesses, the revenue models. So what we've started to do at the Quantum Daily, and what I've really been doing since I joined as CEO, is trying to take this complexity and turn it into something useful. And so we obviously started with all of our articles. We got all this information and we started being able to advise clients because we effectively were seeing across the industry. You know, we weren't advising on the quantum physics. That'd be nuts, but we were advising on what we were seeing in the market and what we were seeing around the different companies. And then there's this one key point where we notice, look, we're actually sitting on a lot of data. And so we've got a team now, we've got a team of 10 people, and it broadly splits between tech and data and those doing the journalism and, you know, marketing, etc. And what happens is they cross-pollinate. You know, if you're doing the articles on, you know, detailed companies and detailed quantum tech, it's really important to pass it on to, like, enshrining that in data that people can use and understand. And so that's been the genesis of what we've been building with the Quantum Insider, which is a data platform solely focused on quantum technologies, which captures not just the kind of static information on this market, but all the also the connectivity of what is a complex ecosystem of investors, governments, academia, companies, individuals, and then all the papers, the academic papers, the patents that sit around it. And so what we hope to do by offering this service to the industry is accelerate the development of this ecosystem. If you don't understand the ecosystem, how on earth are you going to make it thrive? And so really that's what we've been doing. But I guess rather than talking all about, you know, what we've been doing, I think it's more interesting maybe to talk about what we've been seeing in the market recently. Absolutely. So Evan, I mean, you've been watching this and just messaging me going, what on earth is going on? So do you want to talk about some of the things we've been saying?
Absolutely. And it's funny, I was going to actually throw that question right back at you, because we are kind of agnostic to the entire quantum computing industry, where we're sitting right in the middle between both the scientific and academic aspects of it, as well as the commercial and really financial aspect of it. We're having these two kind of very different and sometimes conflicting industries starting to come together now and clashing in some respect, but all kind of having the same goal of trying to make a practical and useful commercial quantum computer that actually works. So us being kind of sitting in the middle, seeing news coming in every day, day in, day out, there's been a number of developments kind of on both sides. And, you know, from, I think in that respect, I was wondering from your perspective, what do you think, I guess, in your opinion, is from mostly a scientific point, the most advanced, or I guess, the most significant advancement from the scientific side in quantum computing over the last 2 years. So obviously we've seen things like Google announcing quantum supremacy, as well as major advancements in the quantum sensing space. But I'd love to kind of hear from you and your thoughts on, like, kind of where you kind of see the most significant aspect so far.
So as with all important questions, I missed the critical bit due to internet failure. But I think the question was around what is the big developments that we're expecting to see.
Mostly on the scientific side, on the academic. Mm.
Well, I mean, I should caveat mTOR. You know, I'm not the scientist in the room, and, you know, there's people on our team who will know that far better than me. But what I can do is talk to the kind of conversations I'm having. And the most obvious point that people are focusing on is around the scalability of quantum computers. So obviously everyone got very excited around the Google's supremacy announcement, which was effectively making up a contrived problem that is specifically designed to demonstrate that a quantum computer can beat a classical computer. But it didn't do anything useful apart from demonstrate some hypothetical supremacy, as it was termed. So what do we need to get to some kind of useful quantum computer? Most people are starting to look at ways of increasing the number of qubits and making higher quality qubits. And so what I mean by that is every researcher in the space will note that there's a problem with noise in quantum computers. It's not just dealing with ones and zeros like in bits, where you effectively attenuate down to zero, attenuate up to one. It's having to deal with very sensitive systems that operate at, you know, millikelvin temperatures and can have interference from stuff you just wouldn't even see in the world, you wouldn't even think about. And so what companies are trying to do is otherwise go all guns blazing to build millions of qubits and then use some of those qubits to error correct our one qubit that can be useful. Some people call this a logical qubit. And there are others who are focused on making better qubits using different approaches. Now, what I will tell you is that every person I speak to will say, if they're in the quantum computing space, that their method is best. They'll normally do it pretty tongue-in-cheek and pretty cognizant of the fact that everyone else is saying it. But what that tells me is the jury is still out on how it's going to be achieved. But it's going to be really interesting how we do it. And there's all sorts of problems that we need to get through, which are not that obvious. So if you try and build, let's say, a massive superconducting quantum computer, there's all sorts of questions on how on earth do you keep the damn thing cool? If this computer is going to take up the size of a room, do we need a fridge the size of the room? So do we need to have a look at how we redo all of our dilution fridges? Do we need a million cables, a cable for every qubit, or four cables for every qubit? Or hang on, if we're going to have a million qubit quantum computers, are we going to run out of space for cables? And so there's all these like slightly perfunctory questions that are starting to emerge. And so what I think will be interesting and what people are very much focused on is, A, can we use the kind of NISQ, the early stage quantum computers, NISQ, to do something useful in the next 5 to 10 years? And if so, what's it going to be? Or are we going to quickly accelerate into building these fault-tolerant quantum computers with millions of qubits, where you don't even need to worry about trying to make this slightly funky system spit out the answer you want? And so when we get answers on either of those things, this is when you're going to have the next pop in the market. I think there was an enormous amount of arm flailing after the Google's quantum supremacy announcement, and there's been an interesting amount of capital flowing into the space backed by this kind of wall of government money. The next challenge is to do something useful at all.
No, I'm fully aligned with you. I think the biggest noise that we heard in the past kind of a year and a half so was about Google's announcing quantum supremacy. That really shook some things up, and it actually came out of China as well recently, actually saying that they actually had reached quantum supremacy as well. I kind of forgot the exact experiment that they did do, but maybe you can talk a little bit too about, because there's been a lot of conversation about kind of the dichotomy or the difference between quantum supremacy as well as quantum advantage. What is the difference?
Sure. So there's been a whole load of back and forth around the unfortunate terminology used for each of these. The supremacy announcement was purely this kind of contrived experiment to show that we could do something better or quicker, on a quantum computer, something that we couldn't do on a classical computer. The reason for this is the idea is that for classical computers, it would take, you know, thousands and millions of years or the computer the size of a planet to do these kind of calculations, which clearly isn't possible. Quantum advantage is a much more practical idea, which is you can start to use a quantum computer to demonstrate some degree of advantage over existing classical computers. Now, that could be a very small thing. So it could be running, you know, a simulation 20% faster. It could be running a Monte Carlo simulation in finance in 10 minutes rather than overnight. Or it could be all the way through to actually finding entirely new ways of modeling our universe. Now, I'm going to say this very carefully because the reality is we don't really know yet what we will be doing with future quantum computers. All I will say that is that humans have been a very poor predictors of exactly what happens in the future. So it may be that we go into this kind of nuclear fusion era where we're spending 20 years trying to work out how to use these damn things. But it may be that just around the corner, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, that we're all going to be slightly surprised and feeling a little silly when we all said, oh, it's never going to happen. And if anyone has a strong opinion either way, I'm very skeptical because it's quite hard to know.
So, no, I really appreciate that answer, and I'm fully aligned with you, and I think our readers are as well. But to kind of shift gears for a second here, because I know we've touched a lot on the academic side and the science side and those developments over the last 2 years, let's shift our focus now, focusing more on the commercial aspects and particularly the amount of funding that has been flowing into this space. Because I believe since the start of this year alone, we've had well over $1 billion private capital as well as government funding. We've had huge announcements from really, really high-end companies such as IonQ and Arqeep, both announcing their own SPACs, as well as arguably the most significant news being announced this past week, which we've covered in depth, being the merging between Honeywell Quantum Solutions, as well as Cambridge Quantum Computing, both of which we know quite well, and had done interviews both with Tony as well as Ilias. Just wondering from your perspective, what does this mean? Like, how are you viewing this? The amount of capital that's flowing in, the amount of money that's flowing in, a lot of individuals still state that, you know, we're in the first inning of this industry, that, you know, we're either, you know, in the 1960s of classical computing right now, or you have the other side that's saying within the next 5 years, we're going to have a practical quantum computer because of the amount of capital that's coming in and because of the amount of smart people that are signing up to start studying and working in this space as a result of that. How are you kind of seeing it? What do you kind of see as the most significant kind of aspect as well as it relates to kind of this capital flowing in?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because there's a degree of self-reinforcement with all of this, right? With a company, you know, you go list on the Toronto Stock Exchange, it helps you get a load of capital. And with that capital, you can suddenly become a legitimate company and you raise at increasing valuations. There's a little bit of an element of that that could be true in the quantum space, where if you throw enough money at a problem, you may well actually solve something that you weren't expecting to. With that said, most of the people I speak to genuinely believe, and I think, you know, who am I to say any different, are they really going to be building quantum computers, are going to be building the software, they're going to be building the hardware for these systems. And so what I see in the market is a huge amount of capital, which will lead to consolidation. So you're having, there's probably five or six of the key quantum computing hardware companies who will have the 100 million plus war chests, who will be able to hire, you know, most of the top talent, which will be self-reinforcing. Those who aren't sitting on those war chests will need to start looking at ways that they can otherwise slightly tweak what they're doing, unless they have some genuine differentiation, or they'll be looking to be acquired. And so at the moment, our data says there's about 350 to 400 quantum technology companies across the value chain. Do we need 20 quantum computing hardware companies? Who knows? But if you look to the classical equivalents, you know, we've seen a huge amount of consolidation there, and I expect that's going to continue happening. But that, in a way, is a problem for, or, you know, who says it's a problem, but it's an output of something that will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. For now, what it means is that in an industry where, if you look back 10 years, there's sub 100 million of capital from venture capital flowing in, to now, it's now becoming real. If you speak to most people on the street, they still haven't heard of quantum technologies. But as soon as you start seeing headlines with big brand names like IBM, Honeywell, etc., then people start to take notice. And it's when you start seeing the big trading floors at financial institutions, the big pharmaceutical companies start to take note, saying, okay, maybe I should start experimenting with the potential future quantum computing, that again, we start to create this momentum around the market. So I would say the industry has really been starved of investment, and people are rightly very wary of hype. We don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. And there's a risk of doing that around trying to raise huge amounts of capital.
And that's actually a great point, just to cut you off for 1 second, because with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
With the amount of cash that's flowing into the space, many, particularly on the academic side, are actually concerned that this quantum hype, so to speak, is actually damaging for the industry. Where you have the other camp, from the VC perspective, not just the academics, who also are putting pressure on to get a return on their investment, right? So from that perspective, do you have any thoughts on quantum hype, and do you view it as kind of a negative thing, a positive thing, or just something completely in between?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. There's a very simple risk where venture capital has specific time horizons on when they want to return in general. And what that will do for companies that may need 10 years to develop something truly novel, it will put pressure on them, and it may put talent going at kind of short-term gains where actually some of the more fundamental technological breakthroughs would be more valuable. I think, you know, when you see the likes of Scott Aronson, you know, mention there's a real problem here, I have full sympathy when you're, you know, sucking up talent from the universities where there may be a little bit more of a cushion to go out and do longer term, more fundamental research. With that said, this goes back to the self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Which is, you need money to get this industry off the ground. And there is a risk in some sense that there isn't enough hype. Now, hype isn't the right word. There isn't enough understanding or isn't enough excitement around the market to do some of the biggest projects we've done in the world. We've had billions, trillions of dollars flowing at industries. When the US developed its nuclear program, it was a huge amount of capital flowing into the various national labs, trying different ways of, you know, effectively building the technology. And it's only through having this huge amount of funding and the support, you know, both from the government and then some of the private institutions that collaborated with them, that they were able to do something that people were saying were impossible. And this is what I kind of look at here when you look at, you know, nuclear is such an interesting comparative case study, because on the nuclear fission side, when we're creating atomic weaponry and creating the initial nuclear power stations, you know, it's been better than, you know, we ever imagined versus what we thought we would achieve in the 1920s. But when it comes to nuclear fusion, which we thought, you know, you'd see magazines in the 50s and 60s talking about flying cars with, driven by, you know, nuclear fusion reactors that fit in the palm of your hand, right? You know, then it's been very disappointing. So I think it's a double-edged sword. Hype is going to be something we're going to have to contend with, like in any deep tech market. But we need the capital flowing in to make sure that these industries grow.
Absolutely. And on that note, I really like the way you phrased it. And to, I think maybe to put a comparative example or to really contextualize what was said, I recently watched this documentary on Netflix about taking the photograph, their first ever photograph of a black hole, which was announced, I believe, 2 years ago by NSF. And I believe over a 10-year period, they spent over $100 million working towards taking this photo. And if a quantum computer can come in and one, speed up that process, but also help us understand what a black hole actually is, aside from simply taking a photo of it, I ask kind of the audience and listeners, do you think that would be worth it? Considering the fraction of a cost that was spent actually taking that photo, how much would you spend in order to actually understand what it is, what it does, and how we can interact with it? So with that, understanding we only have a couple minutes left, the last thing I really want to touch on here is quantum ethics, which I know is a topic very near and dear to your heart, as well as mine and the rest of the team over at TQD, because with, say it again, with great power comes great responsibility. We recently released a documentary on quantum ethics, and we actually have one coming out soon on sustainability, which will be released coming this July. We have some great partners and speakers with that, so more to come. But from my perspective, ethics to me, it means something different to everyone. And we like to ask all our readers, all our listeners, what ethics means to you. So to me, it's all about the democratization of the technology, having everyone being able to access it and using it in a meaningful and proactive way. So with you, Alex, we'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on ethics, what it means to you to wrap this up.
Yeah, no, thank you, Evan. I mean, it's multifaceted like anything. What it doesn't mean to me is vague statements. And this is the problem with any industry where, you know, people slightly get worried about stuff and then kind of say some nice platitudes and then don't really do anything. So I think what's really important is to actively expand the conversation around this and to have the conversation early. So part of what we've been looking at is what is the full gamut of responsibilities that we need to consider in this industry, whether it goes to the absurd level of gender, you know, diversity. So there's literally no diversity in this industry, or whether it goes to the risk that you have all of the quantum power, so the quantum computing, computational power going in the hands of the few, the highest bidder. And, you know, we don't know what you can do with these systems yet. We've got no idea. And it is the same kind of conversation we need to have around things like artificial intelligence, because we should not have the arrogance to think that this is a non-issue for us. So what I'm really focused on, and I know the whole team at the Quantum Daily is focused on, is how can we take the kind of general debates, which are starting to happen, there's starting to appear these kind of 5 to 10 key areas that we want to discuss, and how do we take that into some kind of action? And so we are partnering with a number of institutions, which we'll be announcing in the coming months, around some specific initiatives where we're trying to open up the conversations to the community around what are the specific targets that we can hit, and what are the specific you know, guide rails we can stick to, and get make sure we have sign off from the experts in the industry. So rather than just having chats on webinars like we're doing now, we actually achieve something practical for the industry.
Tangible solutions. Right. To fully align with you there, Alex. And with that, you know, getting to the top of the hour here, would love to thank everyone for tuning in and watching and kind of, you know, continuing to support the Quantum Daily as we aim to bring you breaking news and the highest end data possible on everything quantum technology related. With that, we plan to have our next webinar in a couple weeks. So please let us know who you want to see us speak to, who we should interview, who we should bring on the show, and what topics you want to hear about. You know, we're breaking news every day, but would love to kind of bring you guys inside to the actual companies and what they're doing, how we actually connect with them on a fundamental level. So thanks so much again. And thank you, Alex. Chat soon.